I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we are in episode 52.
Yeah.
And we watched Monsters, Inc.
Rawr.
Rawr. Boo.
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 I'm a chameleon. You can't see me.
I wish you were Steve Buscemi sometimes.
Damn.
No, I mean, for no other reason than I just kind of want to make out with Steve Buscemi sometimes.
Also, ew.
Never.
I don't know.
Mm-mm-mm. Bug eyes. Yeah, they do it for me. Anyways,
yes.
If I sound a little off, folks, I'm recovering from a cold, so forgive the squeakiness of my voice.
So 2001, Pixar's Monsters, Inc. Pixar had quite a good run leading up to this one, and even more great films came out after Monsters, Inc.
This is definitely the golden era of Pixar, for sure. I feel like they had to, like, they came out of the gate strong. What was after Toy Story? Bug's Life?
Yes.
And then this?
No, it just went back to Toy Story 2.
Oh, Toy Story 3, and then this? The Incredibles had to have been in there. The Incredibles came out
after.
Yeah, because it was finally them doing people well. Well, you look that up. I feel like Pixar kind of had to prove itself, right? Like, Toy Story couldn't have been a fluke. And then A Bug's Life was really fucking cute. Underrated, for sure, but really fucking cute. And then Toy Story 2 is interesting that they went back to that. But yeah, like, I feel like Monsters, Inc. was kind of the beginning of the Pixar's not fucking around, right? Because by the fourth movie or so, they really had to be up there. They really had to know what the fuck they were doing in order for people to sit back and pay attention, right? So this, I think, would be the beginning of, like, what most people would consider the golden era of Pixar.
So Pixar released Toy Story, followed by Bug's Life, Toy Story 2, and then, yes, Monsters, Inc. I didn't know that Monsters, Inc. was so soon after. I didn't know it was their third, like, story.
Yes.
Essentially.
Well, fourth. It was their fourth movie.
Yeah, but Toy Story 1 and 2, I just feel, is like its own universe, its own place. Then Bug's Life was its
Yes, though
thing.
That is true.
And this is its third.
This is its third. But it is still the fourth movie, but it is the third story. But like I said, you know, this had to be proof that Pixar wasn't just a fluke, because Toy Story was great and Toy Story 2 were great. They were in there themselves, right? Bug's Life, again, underrated, darling as hell. And man, do I mix a Bug's Land at Disney California
Adventure.
Really
very cute.
God, it just was
area.
It was such a cute area. Like, the benches were made of to look like popsicle sticks that had been, you know, consumed or used, and so they were like the way that the paint faded from like a brown into like a berry popsicle stain look, like
For those of you who don't know, Bug's Land is kind of where you, in California Adventureland, it's where you take your toddlers.
Yes. It is like the toddler area, because that was where they had like a little tiny roller
coaster. They had
roller
rides that toddlers could ride for the most part, except for one.
Yeah. When you walked in, you felt like you were a bug, right? Everything was tall and big. The rides were made to look, you know, you felt like you were the size of a
There's
bug.
A ride that our firstborn really, really loved.
Yeah, the balloons.
Well, no. I guess they were balloons.
Yeah, or...
Well, they were like... It was like trash.
Yes.
That had like parachutes almost to the top. But, you know, there was Chinese takeout
boxes. As like the thing that you sit in.
Really
Heinrich's choo-choo train where you like went through a giant slice of watermelon.
Yeah, you're riding the caterpillar. And
like through food.
You're going through food.
And they would like pump in the scents of the food. So when you went past the blueberry muffin, it was...
That place.
It was magical. But anyways, Monsters, Inc.,
well,
a classic.
And then, following Monsters, Inc., you know, you said they had to prove that they were not just a fluke. Because I think some people were unsure about Bug's Life.
Yeah.
When it first came out.
Again, it's an underrated classic.
Toy Story 1 and 2
are what they
great
are.
Great movies. Monsters, Inc. then came out, which proved to be a really great
yeah.
film. Then following that, they just Finding Nemo, The
Banger.
Incredibles.
Banger.
Cars.
Banger.
Ratatouille.
Banger.
WALL-E.
Banger.
Up.
Banger.
Toy Story 3.
Banger.
And then came all crashing down when Cars 2 came out.
It really kind of did.
And then it was like, you know, it was like every other, like Cars 2, not so much. No. Brave, fantastic.
Brave, yeah.
Monsters University, I've still only seen it once.
Yeah.
Inside Out.
Yeah, great.
The Good Dinosaur, it's a good movie,
yeah.
but it's just a good movie.
It's just a good movie, that's
it. But it's
it.
Really sweet.
And it's
really
kind of a troubled movie, too. Like, it, even, you can tell that the plot's a little squirrely on that one. And it was a squirrely plot, if you read like the makings of that one.
And then Finding Dory, which I really like.
Yeah, I only saw it the one time.
Cars 3, I have never seen. Coco, which I absolutely love.
Which we have to watch
Incredibles
soon.
Incredibles 2, you've never seen, but our kids love it.
I have seen it once, but I don't remember it.
Okay.
And I know that because I, in my time hop recently, popped up a picture, obviously an Instagram, like, reel or an Instagram story, popped up in my time hop the other day that was like, I finally get to watch Incredibles 2, but I couldn't tell you. Well, I could tell you a lot about it, but because of my kids watching the, you know, somebody play the Lego version of Incredibles 2 before they ever even saw the film.
Yeah, so they knew all
so
the
thanks,
plot points.
YouTube.
So Monsters, Inc. was directed by Pete Docter.
One of the goats.
I mean, how many times have we brought up Pete Docter on this podcast?
At this point, like, do we keep blowing him or?
I mean, come here, Pete. Worked on Up, WALL-E, Inside Out. Monsters, Inc. was co-directed with Lee Unkrich, who we also know very well. Toy Story 3 was one of a few Pixar movies that has a single director. Most of the time these movies have multiple directors.
You kind of have to.
Toy Story 3 had one director, and that was Lee Unkrich. He also was one of the three directors, I think, behind Coco. David Silverman also, I think I've seen an interview with David Silverman, and he's a really funny guy, but he was the director of the Simpsons movie. And he's also been a supervising director for the Simpsons TV show for 73 episodes, which, you know, in the grand scheme of how many episodes The Simpsons is now, which I don't know, but it's in the hundreds. But 73 episodes that he's been a supervisor director on, and he's been doing it since episode one. So those three guys are our directors. Pete Docter also wrote the screenplay for Monsters, Inc. Some other, you know, he also had a hand in writing the original story for Toy Story and many other Pixar films like Up, WALL-E, and Inside Out. Jill Colton was another screenwriter. She's responsible for writing Open Season, which I haven't seen, but I've heard.
No, we've seen Open Season.
Have we seen
right?
Open Season?
I think once forever ago, but it's a cute movie. Maybe just I saw it. It's a cute enough movie.
Is that the one where they go to the house in the backyard of a house? Or no?
That's Over the Hedge.
Over the Hedge.
Yeah. That movie is very fond to us for a different reason. I'm sure if we rewatched it again, we'd be like, I loved it or I hated it. But at the moment, I can just remember it as being cute, I guess.
The third and last writer for Monsters, Inc. was Jeff Pigeon. He wrote some Pixar shorts like Lifted and Mike's New Car.
Oh, man. Lifted is so fucking funny. That's the one, folks, where the trainee alien is, it's like an alien driver's test. And he's supposed to bring the guy, you know, in the house up and out through the window. And it
does he's trying to abduct a guy out of his house while he's sleeping in his bed. But he sucks at it, essentially.
I just remember, like body hitting the wall. It's a really cute one.
The composer for Monsters, Inc. was Randy Newman.
Yeah, which is funny because when we were watching it, I was like, this is Michael Giacchino.
It sounded a little bit like Michael Giacchino for a bit there.
A little, like the jazzy bit of it.
Yeah.
The music in this movie slaps so hard.
It really does. I had to remind myself exactly what the movies were that Randy Newman has composed for. Because we all know him for his more lyrical music.
Yeah.
And not really, and we don't really think about what him as a composer.
Yeah.
But some of the movies that he's composed were The Natural with Robert Redford, Parenthood, Steve Martin, Maverick with Mel Gibson, Jodie Foster, and James Garner, Pleasantville.
Pleasantville's a great movie.
Cars, James and the Giant Peach.
The music for Cars is so under... Cars is so underrated. People hate on Cars so much. But that first one, and then, yeah, like, it's the same story as Doc Hollywood and a thousand other movies, but, like, whatever, who cares? So is Avatar, you motherfuckers. You love those movies. But Cars is a great film. It is so clever, it is so funny, and it will never not make me cry when James Taylor starts singing about Route 66 and Bonnie Hunt is just out there being Bonnie fucking Hunt.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
And Cars Land at Disneyland.
Cars Land is so
California Adventure.
Magical, especially at dusk when all the different, like, each of the neon signs all come on,
they all
and it's
come
like
on
one at a time. Oh, yeah. It's so fucking great.
It's
also that main Cars ride, the one that Radiator Spring Racers, yeah. God, that's
it's legit.
Ride. I've only been on it like twice.
Yeah, because the line is
because
insane.
The line is always insane.
Because it's an amazing ride.
Yeah.
And if you've never been to Cars Land and California Adventure, it is so wild being there because I had always heard that they were building it. I never had a chance to go in. I was a big fan of the movie Cars, and I had watched it many times.
Mm-hmm.
And so you familiarize yourself with every detail on their main street in
that
movie.
No, it is.
And then when you step foot,
spotless.
When you step foot in Cars Land, and it's like everything, it was copied out of the movie.
Yeah,
in
perfect
real life, and all of the different things down their main street are in Cars Land, and it's just so weird being inside of a cartoon like that, seeing it all come to life in front of you physically, being able to touch, you know, the gas station, go over to
like Luigi's Tires.
Yeah,
and
go to Luigi's Tires or
the Flo's Cafe. Like, it was all perfect.
It's so cool, and it's great, and it's great. It got a great soundtrack by Randy Newman. He also did James and the Giant Peach, Bug's Life, Meet the Parents, Seabiscuit, all four, now probably coming up on five Toy Story movies. Cinematography was by Sharon Callahan, and it's interesting because animated movies don't often list a cinematographer specifically. There's maybe like a art director or an animation director, and everybody's actually, you know, looking at whatever work has been done, and, you know, it goes through drafts, and a lot of people look over this stuff. And it's interesting when a cinematographer is actually listed for an animated movie. But Sharon Callahan had also worked on Toy Story 2, Finding Nemo, and Onward.
Yeah, those are all great. Well, Onward was fine, but those are all great films. Onward was fine.
I would watch it again.
I only ever saw it once. It made me cry. I'd watch it again, I guess, if I had to.
If I had to.
But it's, you're going to drag me kicking and screaming into that one. I don't know. Like, there was a while there, you know, slightly pre and mostly post-pandemic, that when it came to Pixar movies, I was just like, ugh, fine. You know what? And it's sort of funny because I feel like Disney hasn't done much with Onward either, because I am if you've listened to this podcast at all for our Disney episodes, I'm an avid Disney Dreamlight Valley fan, which is a great video game where essentially it's The Sims meets Animal Crossing meets Disney. So, like, I run around with Belle and Merida and Hades and fucking Minnie and Mickey and, you know, all the Disney characters, right? And Monsters, Inc. is huge in this game. When I got Sully and Mike, I was so happy. Like, having Sully in the game, he, like, runs around and he does the thing where he does, like, his like, daily calisthenics where he does, like, the push-ups and stuff. So I'll be, like, running through, you know, one of my biomes in my valley, like the peaceful glade, or no, the glade of trust, and he'll be doing push-ups down there. And anyways, like, there is so much furniture and decoration from Monsters, Inc. that is spot on to the movie. In fact, when I was watching the movie, I was like, I have that chair, I have that wallpaper, I have that TV. Onward, not even mentioned in that game. Like, I feel like everybody was just like, Onward happened, and now we go Onward. I doubt we're ever going to see those guys in the game. That's like T-level characters.
I mean, it would be interesting if you had cars started showing up.
You know what?
They're not in your game yet.
We've talked about it on the subreddit about whether or not we would want the cars there.
Just drive by.
Yeah, like you're just running around with fucking, you know, Mater. Oh, I would hate Mater would be as annoying Mater. As Maui is. And if you play Dreamlight Valley, you know how fucking annoying Maui is. God damn it. We all hate him so much.
Monsters, Inc. has a 96% from critics.
Yeah.
And a 90% from audiences.
Yeah.
Great scores. I'm just surprised audiences weren't a little bit more into it as much as critics were. My only criticism of this movie is that it's so much for children.
And this is a very kids movie.
And that's not a bad thing because it's
a kids movie.
It's a kids movie.
Yeah.
It's
funny that we take Pixar for granted. We're like, these films are for us, full-grown adults.
I mean, Pixar movies have so much adult content in it, not that kind of adult content.
I think that Monsters, Inc. has its fair share. Like, kids aren't going to understand an energy crisis.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to understand it. They're just going to know that, like, maybe the monsters under my bed aren't that bad.
Sure. But the story and
it's a lot of slapstick.
The characters and the way compared to, if you start comparing this to other Pixar films, this is very much made for children.
No,
Finding Nemo had some
very adult themes.
Yeah, I mean, these movies have always been great at being
just great stories
to cater towards both children and adults.
Yeah,
plenty of adults love Monsters, Inc., us included, ever since we watched it. I think
you might like this movie a little bit more than I do.
I mean, this movie came out before you and I ever met, and we were already fans.
Yeah.
I definitely saw this in the theater.
I did not.
No?
No. 2001? Well, I was still a teenager, and I would have had to have had somebody take me to the movies to see it. And
I was 20.
Our movie theater was so far away, and I can imagine my parents being like, I don't want to go see it. Kids movie, and me being like, all right, go see a kids movie. Like,
well, me growing up in a church, nothing more Christian like than to go watch a G-rated movie.
Yeah. Oh God.
So and
yeah, no, I this was a movie I saw like on somebody's TV, and yeah, it's cute. I think that I prefer other movies a lot more than this. And in fact, I didn't want to sit down and watch this movie mainly just because like. I've been coming down with cold, guys, and, like, I just didn't want to watch a movie. I wanted to take a nap while you played Red Dead. But, you know, I don't regret seeing this film. I don't hate this movie by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that, like, if I was in the mood for a kid's cartoon or a Disney film, this is not going to be on my list of top 10 films that I want to watch first.
That's fair.
But, you know, nothing against it.
It is a great movie, and it was just fun watching it. It's not my favorite.
Yeah. I have more fun with them in Dreamlight Valley than I.
There's probably at least five other Pixar movies that I'd rather watch before this.
Yeah, easily. Even if some of them are like, I don't know if I want to cry right now, so maybe I don't want to watch any of them. But, you know, if given the choice, I want to sit down and watch Frozen 2 or Encanto or Moana or
Tangled. Those are all Disney films. None of those are Pixar films.
They're animated films. And that's four, like, top billing that I would rather watch over this.
If we're including any animated films, yes, there's probably 10 to 15, 20
other
animated films that I'd rather watch.
I'd rather watch Finding Nemo before this. I would rather watch A Bug's Life before this. I would rather watch Brave before this. Like, you know, it's
but there's absolutely nothing wrong with
it's great.
We love it.
Yeah, it's really cute.
It's just not high on the list.
You know, speaking of Disneyland and California Adventureland, because that's what we call it, because how do you not put land at the end of it, they have a really cute Monsters, Inc. ride, like a really fucking cute Monsters, Inc. ride over in the Hollywood area, and it's kind of like tucked into that left back corner where the Tron Electronica was.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's like any other Disney dark ride where you go in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember it now.
And
I was trying to remember
I think you like sit in like CDC or CDA, like vehicles, and you go through, you know, you go through the plot of a Monsters, Inc. And it's really cute inside and out. It's really adorable. And all the little details that they have for the game are really fucking cute, or for the ride are really cute and movie based. But at the end, when you're waiting to disembark, they've got a giant Roz, and Roz will talk to you. So I was sitting there once, and Roz was like, "Hey, I like your glasses," which I can't do with my voice right now.
"Hey, I like your glasses."
Yeah, and I was like, it's one of those things that somebody sits there and, like, you know, they have got the basic things to say, and then they call out to people.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. And so, like, those are my memories of Monsters, Inc. Like, being on that ride with our friends or our kids.
And across, doesn't Mr. Potato Head do the same thing over in Toy Story?
Yeah, on the arcade Story. Game, whatever it is. Another game we rarely ever went on because the line was always insane.
It's not arcade. It's
it's like Buzz Lightyear's ride.
No, it's a dark, it's another dark ride, but it has it's more interactive.
Yeah, because you have to like shoot to get points. You have to shoot a little.
But it's set up like a carnival.
A carnival, yeah, yes.
That's the word I was looking for.
And it's, you know, another ride that we barely ever went on because we were just like, the line's insane, and it's cute, but like it's just
cute,
fine,
but it's not worth the wait.
Especially when we had toddlers.
Especially when you have toddlers standing there, and they're not interested in it. They get on it and they're just like, this is dumb.
Yeah, but they loved Buzz Lightyear.
Well, sure.
But Buzz Lightyear's the same thing. It's a game that it's a ride that you get on and you have to shoot things.
Buzz Lightyear's a lot more fun, I think.
Buzz Lightyear was a lot more fun. But the Buzz Lightyear ride slaps so hard, and I'm really sad we didn't go on it. Guys went on it.
Oh, the kids and I went on it.
Yeah,
so
but
many times.
I didn't.
Oh,
the last time we were there.
Yeah.
I didn't for some reason.
Yeah, you were with somebody.
I was tired. Or I wanted to go do something.
Because the kids and I, we kept going any ride that we could find. Because we used to do this before we even had kids, but as the night winds down and they're getting closer and closer to closing.
Yeah. You're like,
people are starting
10 minutes?
To leave. Yeah. Those 40-minute rides start going to 20.
Yeah.
Start going down to 10.
Yeah.
And then it's one of those where you're just like, I can run right into
real
this
fast,
line. And, yeah. Let's do Star Tours three more times. Here we go.
I often talk about how if I could go back in time and rewatch a movie for the first time, like I have my list of films. But if I could go back in time and spend just any random, like, fucking Groundhog's Day, or if somebody was like, pick a day to go, just pick a day to relive, I'd pick a day where it was you and me, pre-kids at Disneyland. Like, I would pick the day that Heath Ledger passed, because, or that we found out that he passed, the day after Martin Luther King's birthday, when we went to Disneyland, and there was nobody fucking there.
Nobody there after.
And we just had the park to ourselves and the 1,000 other people that were in the park. But Disneyland is so big that if you only have 1,000 people there, that's
nobody. It's practically
empty. Yeah. And like, what joy it was to just spend a day at Disneyland with you.
Yeah.
Oh, I miss it so much.
I mean, one of my favorite memories, other than
makes me so sad that it's
so expensive
being, now.
Other than being at Disneyland with you,
yeah,
one of my other favorite memories of being at Disneyland is when you were pregnant with our son. And you stayed home.
And you took
and our firstborn and I went to Disneyland by ourselves and just spent the day at Disneyland.
I never got to experience that. I'm really sad about that. And that'll never happen again. Like, Disneyland is never going to be cheap.
Not
ever again.
I mean, we used to go in a time when California Adventureland was not popular.
Yeah, nobody liked it.
Everybody hated it because it was all pretty much like fair rides.
Yeah.
And
we were there, but it wasn't just fair rides.
No, it wasn't.
Like, there was so much to it, except for that fucking goofy ride.
Yeah,
we don't talk about that. Back when the swings were inside the giant orange, before they
changed the
whole
giant peach ride.
Yeah, that whole area before they changed it
when it was more
California based,
where the Golden Gate Bridge was kind of like the bridge that. You went under
to open it up.
Yeah, to come into California.
Man, before they renovated it for the first time. Like, there
it's
was
been
a joy.
Renovated a few times now.
Speaking of a Bugs Land, we've gotten off in such a wild tangent. I mean, you know, this is what happens when it comes to the animated ones, because we've all seen it. We don't have to talk too much about Monsters, Inc. But one of my favorite Disney souvenirs was I was there with our friend Jenny, and we were going into a Bugs Land, and one of the Disney cast members was there touching up paint on the wall. And they had these great, like, thick, you know, paper, not cardboard, but like thick paper signs of Mickey holding a paintbrush with a paint bucket next to it. And it says wet paint. And I was like, hey, man, can I have one of those? And he was like, yeah, sure. And he handed it to me. And I found it maybe like 3 or 4 months ago in a box randomly.
Wow.
But I still have it. And like, how many people have a official Disney wet paint sign?
I mean, other than people have been past cast members.
Well, yeah. But like, not many people seem to think to stop and say, hey, can I have one of those?
Sure.
Like,
well, you're a sar.
I am a sar.
No, I can't say that.
Well, based on who I am,
based
I will
off
just
of your family, we'll yeah, just say that
I'll walk up to anybody and just ask them a question.
Hey,
and,
could I have that? I mean, the worst thing that happens is they just say no and you just move on with your day. But
nothing ventured, nothing gained.
A lot of times, the way you people and your family charm,
you know, other
I've seen the charm firsthand, and it's like a magic trick.
It's
sometimes
not. It's kindness. It's a smile.
Yeah, but
it's just a polite.
Other people do
oh,
it.
Hey, can I have that?
There's a
there is a charm.
There's a tone.
Yeah. And you know what? I use it for good.
Yeah. You use it for good. The rest of your family
uses it for evil.
Monsters, Inc. was made for $115
million. Yikes.
Which, I mean, we've talked about Pixar movies up
yeah,
to upwards
no,
of $200
no,
million.
But I guess for their fourth movie.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Yeah, this was a big
Disney's
one.
Disney's throwing
money
at them.
Sully's hair took.
I believe the DVD has a lot of behind-the-scenes footage of them working on that hair.
And if you think about it, like, they talk
and
about
in the
how
time,
much
2001, 2002, when the DVD came out, that shit was groundbreaking.
It's still beautiful.
Of, they're talking about how many millions of hairs that are actually being animated.
And that shit takes time, and you don't think about the money that had to be paid for it.
I mean,
so Sully is an expensive fucking character.
It made $291 million domestically.
Woo!
Domestically.
Woo!
Completely wiped out.
Yikes!
That's way more than
budget gone.
That's more than double the budget. And $289 million internationally, with an extra $84 million for home media, for a total of $664 million.
Yikes.
Which is almost six times the budget.
Fucking, of course it did.
Of course it did.
Of course it did.
It won an Oscar, but not for what you think.
No.
It won Best Original Song for Randy Newman's If I Didn't Have You, which is
a
good
song.
It was up against The Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, May It Be.
Ah! Oh, is it better than... It's not better than Enya. Enya was robbed that year. I think I was pissed about that when I watched those Oscars. I was like, son of a bitch.
The other nominees were music from, or original songs from Pearl Harbor, Kate and Leopold, and Vanilla Sky.
Oh. Kate and Leopold's such a stupid fucking movie, and I love it so much. I miss early 2000s rom-coms. They were so dumb and so good. Yeah, the early 2000s were like, what if a dude traveled in time and fell in love with Meg Ryan? Like, fucking Hugh Jackman is so fucking cute in that movie. Ugh.
And even though Lord of the Rings lost to Monsters, Inc. for original song, Lord of the Rings did win original score.
Yes.
Which Monsters, Inc. was nominated for. But
I mean, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Rings scores. Like,
no,
one
Howard
of the best
Shore.
Fucking perfect.
Yeah, Monsters, Inc. is not winning against.
No, nothing was winning against that.
And
the Two Towers would have swept it, too, if they didn't have that stupid fucking rule.
Yeah, absolutely. Dumb rule. And then when we did our Shrek episode, we talked about Shrek winning against Monsters,
so,
Inc. And after rewatching
the two
Monsters,
of them,
Inc., I'm like, I understand.
I mean, okay, the animation is better in Monsters, Inc.
It is.
But Shrek's...
But it's not just about animation when it comes to best animated
Shrek's
films.
Shrek's kind of the more
fun
film.
They're looking at everything. The music, the score.
Yeah.
the story, everything is being judged.
Yes, I would rather watch Shrek than Monsters, Inc.
Yes.
Which,
when we're talking about
again, do you think Disney was like, we're going to fuck first animated feature film, best Oscar? Like, this is in the bag. And then Shrek comes along. And I mean, Disney has won plenty. Pixar has won plenty of the best.
We talked about it before how every year when Pixar has a movie up, it's just like, well, I wonder who it's going to go to this year. Well,
yeah, but it wasn't like they were bad Pixar movies, though.
I think,
like, of course Up was going to get it. Of course The Incredibles is going to get it.
I want to say they got 4 in a row.
Yeah, that's not right.
Maybe 5.
Yeah.
Not Monsters, Inc.
Nope. And you know what? I'm sure some people would probably take umbrage with that, but frankly, I think Shrek is the better film.
I know this has nothing to do with Monsters, Inc., the same year of this of these Oscars. Denzel Washington won for Training Day. The other nominees were Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind, Sean Penn in I Am Sam, Will Smith for Ali, and Tom Wilkinson for In the Bedroom. It was him and Sissy Spacek and Marissa Tomei, who also both of those actresses got nominated for Best and Supporting Actress nominations. Nick Stahl and Karen Allen are. I'm pretty sure I've seen that movie, In the Bedroom.
I have not.
But the reason I wanted to talk about this is because I love Tom Wilkinson.
Tom Wilkinson was great.
He was. R.I.P. But the fact that he went up against Denzel Washington, Russell Crowe, Sean Penn, and Will Smith, especially Will Smith and Ali. Yeah, just an amazing actor.
We do love and miss you, Tom Wilkinson. Fuck, were you good. I'm never unhappy to see him in anything. When he pops up, I'm like, oh, yay.
This is a cast from the late 90s. that has bled into the early 2000s.
I mean, yeah, this is, you know, this is a solid cast of your dad's favorite actors.
Yeah.
And I just mean that in general as your dad's favorite actors.
Well, I mean, sure, it's Billy Crystal, John Goodman, James Coburn.
Uh-huh. And Steve Buscemi.
And Steve Buscemi, yeah.
And Jennifer Tilly.
Sure,
like, this is my dad's favorite actors. Especially. And I don't blame him because I fucking love this cast.
My dad loves this movie.
Oh, like, that's really?
Toy Story is his favorite.
Yeah.
As far as...
You know, I don't think I ever knew this. This is adorable.
I bought Toy Story for him for Christmas.
Oh.
1 year, I believe, on DVD. I think.
That makes me love your dad so much.
He loves Toy Story, and because he was a big... Tim Allen fan from Home Improvement.
Oh, fuck, yeah. I mean...
He does like Tom Hanks, but Tim Allen was his favorite.
You know, I don't know if my dad has ever seen any of these films, because my dad very much is like, I'm an adult. Why do I need to watch cartoons?
Sure.
But I think that my dad would love Toy Story.
Monsters, Inc. was also right up there for my dad.
I love that your dad likes these films, and you know how much I love your father. I love my father-in-law.
I like that my dad is always down to watch whatever dumb movie I want him to watch.
That is true. That is so true.
Let's watch this movie together. And he's like, okay.
Okay. And, you know, like, getting him to sit down and watch Twisters with us over Thanksgiving was a delight. It was so much fun.
It was so much fun. And I love sharing... I mean, I love sharing movies that I like with anybody.
Yeah.
I have a friend coming over in a couple days because I just got a new TV.
Yes. Somebody got something fancy for his birthday.
My very first 4K television.
It's too big.
It's too big. Massive.
It's too big for
me. I'm in a movie theater now.
Oh, my God.
I'm in the front row.
Can we watch
the IMAX?
Wait, hold on. Yes. Nothing else matters. Is there a 4K version of Interstellar?
Yes, there is.
We need that, and we need to watch that ASAP.
I can make that happen.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I mean, he's coming over to watch The Northman.
Ugh.
Because I sent him a list of all the 4K movies that I own.
What are me and the kids going to do while that happens?
Plug your ears?
Endure, yeah. Anyways, I love... going back to it, I love your dad, and I love that your dad loves this movie. I think that's so sweet. Your dad is such a gentle soul, despite the fact that he's not gruff in any way. shape or form, but like he's not the most emotional man.
He was born in the early 50s,
yes,
raised by people who were born in the early to mid 30s.
Yeah.
And
so like he doesn't share his emotions verbally. But I think that finding out about the stuff that he likes, it's sort of like with my dad, and I'm trying to understand my father through the art that he likes, right? The music and the movies and all those things. It's my way of trying to find out who he is at a deeper level than what he's ever shown me. Because, you know, our dads were born in the 40s and 50s, so they don't exactly share this shit with us. So, like, understanding somebody's art preferences is a way to understand them at a deeper level without them having to, like, admit it out loud.
Right.
And so knowing that your dad likes these movies somehow makes it him even more wholesome and sweet to me. And I adore your father, and you know that. I'm so glad I have such a good relationship with my in-laws. I couldn't imagine if they didn't like me. Caveman.
I wonder what that's like. Well, do you have a favorite Billy Crystal film?
I knew you were going to ask this. And so I've been going through a process of trying to pull up his filmography. And IMDb is, I love IMDb. Like that website has been a favorite website of mine for fucking years. It is unreadable in its web internet form. Unreadable. There's so many ads. All the ads are playing. There's so much music. There's so many different flashing things. And like, I do not have my computer plugged in right now, so my battery is actively dying very quickly. And so I pulled up Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And I never realized that I could pull up somebody's filmography on Wikipedia before.
Really? You didn't know that?
No, I have always used IMDb. Why would I go anywhere else but the Internet Movie Database?
IMDb makes it easy because I really love how I can filter to my preference. Like,
yes,
I just want to see this actor.
That's not easy to do on their website, though.
I know.
Their website is not unreadable because of the ads.
No, if they made their website more like they do on a phone.
Fucking their app is perfect.
Their app is perfect.
Yeah.
Wikipedia is fantastic for, I love it for when you just want to see, I want a list of, that. I mean, that's where I go to see every single Pixar film and when they were released.
Yeah.
What year they were released and in what order.
No, Wikipedia is great.
Bibliographies.
Every time they're like, hey, give us $2.50 to keep us alive. I'm always like, nope. Anyways.
That's okay because I pay them like $1 a month.
Oh, good. That's for both of us.
Yeah,
but I've pulled up
50 cents each. You're welcome.
Thanks, Wikipedia. You're on it a lot more than I am. So it's more like 10 cents for me. Anyways, a favorite.
Billy Crystal
film. I mean, The Princess Bride, of course. I haven't seen City Slickers in a really long time. I forgot that he's in Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet, but I love that he's in Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet, and I really need to rewatch that movie. So that's pretty high up there. Other than that, in Monsters, Inc., I kind of don't have a whole lot of my favorite Billy Crystal movies. I remember watching City Slickers as a kid and being like, it's a fun comedy about Westerns, because my dad loved Westerns, so, and he loved Billy Crystal, so of course we were going to watch this fucking movie.
Yeah.
And then I remember crying during City Slickers, and that was like the first time that I was like, I can cry at comedies? What is happening?
Not really a Western, but...
No, well, it's Western enough.
Western adjacent.
Yeah. I do not care for When Harry Met Sally.
I've never seen it. He was also in Spinal Tap.
He was also... I've only seen Spinal Tap once. And it's a great film.
I'm glad that I finally got you to watch it once.
When Harry Met Sally has been parodied too much, and it's problematic in its own way because of when it was made. So for me, my favorite Billy Crystal movie would probably have to be, you know, Princess Bride.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Or this. Or Monsters, Inc. But for me, it's Princess Bride. Look, he may have a small part as Miracle Max, but he fucking owns that movie as Miracle Max.
He's great.
You and I quoted it recently.
Have fun storming the castle.
Have fun storming the castle.
Bye bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye bye.
We'll say that to our child when we send them off to D&D. And they don't get it.
They don't get it.
Because they won't watch movies with us.
And it makes perfect sense to me because they're going to play D&D. And go have fun storming the castle.
Yeah. And the amount of times I say, I'm not a witch, I'm your wife, is ridiculous. Even in like when you're not around. But so yeah, for me, I mean, Billy Crystal's great. I really enjoyed the portrayal of him in Saturday Night. SNL movie.
That actor did a good job
Really good job
imitating Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
Mine is City Slickers.
I would like to watch City Slickers again.
You should watch City Slickers again. Yeah. It is a good movie.
And like he's been everywhere forever. Like, you know, and of course Analyze This is fine, I guess. And America's Sweethearts, I remember watching but not really liking. I haven't actually seen Howl's Moving Castle yet, so that's on the list, and we will watch that. You know, he's definitely not. He hasn't done a lot lately because he's just living his life and enjoying it. Have I ever made you watch Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet? Have you seen Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet?
No.
You know how you always make me watch movies? I'm making you watch Hamlet. It doesn't even need to be for this podcast, but I'm making you watch Hamlet. Okay. It's stunning. Yeah, but he's Billy Crystal. Like, he's great. He's
all right, well, do you have a favorite John Goodman movie?
See, this is a tough one. I did not, but my family loved Arachnophobia growing up. And my vivid memory of Arachnophobia, because I myself have not so much anymore, because if you live in the Pacific Northwest, you have to learn to get over your arachnophobia, because you'll wake up and you'll just be like, oh, spider. And none of them are, you know, venomous. It's not like growing up in the desert where we had to deal with fucking black widows or like brown recluses or anything. Like, you just roll over and there's a daddy long leg sleeping next to you and you're like, ha! But as a kid, I was really terrified of spiders. And my family loved Arachnophobia and I could never watch it. But I'll never forget John Goodman as the exterminator in that decrepit house.
Yeah.
Right.
He goes into the barn and the spiders eat him.
I love John Goodman because it's not that he'll do anything, but he does a lot of varied things.
He does a lot of great things. So
like, my favorite animated film with John Goodman.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Is Emperor's New Groove. Fucking, that movie is perfect in every single way.
Pacha
is such a pure character.
And Pacha and Sully are very similar.
And they're flawless.
Yeah.
Like, I watched King Ralph a lot growing up, which is insane because I haven't seen that movie in a long time. King Ralph is where he discovers that he's the next in line to the British throne, but he's an American and he's John Goodman.
I mean, you got Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski is a great fucking movie.
Great part.
He is so anti-John Goodman in The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's such an asshole.
Walter's great.
God's sakes, The Flintstones was even pretty decent because of him.
You know,
I will not watch Blues Brothers 2000.
Flintstones was good because
the original for Flintstones is not that bad. He's a great Rick Moranis.
For the time that it was made, he was a great choice to play Fred.
And
Rick Moranis was a great choice
to play Barney.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up on Fred. And even though I grew up on the Flintstones
cartoon
because of reruns.
Yeah.
Like, obviously it had already run its course years before I was born. But I grew up on the reruns and I love the Flintstones. And I thought that his portrayal as Fred Flintstone was perfect.
Yeah.
It was I was seeing Fred Flintstone. That was the character that I saw. And Barney, especially Rick Moranis.
Yeah. Fucking Rick Moranis.
Him as Barney. His top three movies are
Ghostbusters,
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and Flintstones.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I loved him. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Will forever be one of my favorite films.
And Strange Brew. I'm gonna throw Strange Brew in there because you can't mention Rick Moranis. But
Strange Brew.
Oh my god!
He literally just pushed away from the table. Oh, and now he's turned away from me. Oh no, folks. You might have just been an audible witness to the breakage of our marriage. I'm so sorry. I haven't seen it.
Wow, that is so... I thought because of, like, Ghostbusters that you would have... And just the love of Rick Moranis that you would have watched Strange Brew.
Again, it's one of those things that if it wasn't shown to me as a kid, which it might have been.
I'm surprised.
I might have seen it once forever and a day ago. I mean, I'm 40. I don't remember half the shit that I've seen. I don't remember half the shit I did today. And then by the time I was an adult, it just became one of those things that I was like, I'll get to it, but there's too much else.
There is too much else.
Yeah.
There's too much content out there.
I just want to point out going back to John Goodman. I love him in anything that he's ever done. I'm never unhappy to see John Goodman. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou is a forever favorite film of mine. It holds up. You and I watched it 2 years ago. It's been a couple of years.
I love Oh, Brother, Where Art
Thou.
Yeah,
but that movie is perfection.
It's one of my favorite Coen Brothers.
It's my favorite Coen Brothers movie. He's in Inside Llewyn Davis for like 3 seconds, and he's an asshole, but I love him in that.
He does like to just show up.
Yeah, that's the wonderful thing about John Goodman. It's like you'll just be like, John Goodman.
I mean, his bit on Community.
Yes.
Where he just shows up.
Oh my God, as the dean of the AC, the air conditioning repair school,
yeah.
Which is like the true power of Greendale.
Which is like the Illuminati, but...
I know, it's...
it's so funny.
What is this room? I feel so comfortable. You know, when people say room temperature, this is the room. Him and Donald Glover had amazing chemistry in Community. I love him in The Princess and the Frog. You know, I love him in... He pops up in Argo. He pops up in The Hangover Part 3. He pops up in Monuments Men, which was a pretty decent film, actually. 10 Cloverfield Lane. Like, he kind of came out of nowhere and played a villain, a very unique villain in 10 Cloverfield Lane. He's in Kong Skull Island,
actually,
for fuck's sake.
I really, really liked him in 10 Cloverfield Lane. After Cloverfield, I wasn't the biggest fan of Cloverfield, but I'm also not the biggest fan of found footage.
Yeah, no, Cloverfield itself was a rough movie.
It was rough, and you know, since then it has found its cult following, mm-hmm. of course, but 10 Cloverfield Lane, because I think before that there was a Cloverfield 2?
I don't
keep track.
Yeah, I think 10 Cloverfield Lane kind of came out of nowhere, and everybody's like, why are they doing this again? Oh, I see why. But anyways, my point is that I will never not love John Goodman, but for me, if I'm going to sit down and watch, like, a John Goodman film...
It's Mary Elizabeth Winstead, that's
what you know, it's like, Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou, or, you know, Dirty Work. I fucking love Dirty Work. Dirty Work stars Norm Macdonald. It's kind of one of those like Adam Sandler-esque movies where it's like Adam Sandler and Steve Buscemi and fucking Norman, you know, and all those guys. But Dirty Work was such a fun movie. I love The Big Lebowski. Don't get me wrong. I think The Big Lebowski is a great fucking film. Walter is such an asshole, and he is so unlikable that it makes it hard for me to watch it sometimes.
Because I still like him.
I think he's such an asshole.
But he's an asshole, but he acts like he's so smart and
tough.
Yeah. And then when it comes down to it, he's not.
Yeah.
He's stupid.
But I'm not watching that movie for him.
Not all he's cracked up to be. In fact, you're right.
The Big Lebowski
Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi. So leading into Steve Buscemi, who, by the way...
Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Shut the fuck up. Steve Buscemi is so hot. And I know you're looking at me right now and you're just like, really? But like, I would let Steve Buscemi destroy me.
Ew.
I like the weird bug eyes. I like the weird teeth. Him.
You know what? Steve Buscemi in his later years, especially Boardwalk Empire compared to his earlier in like
Boardwalk 90s, Empire, I was like, ho-ho! What?
I don't know about that.
What?
I mean, it is better than other
Charlie stuff. Cox is in this. Why am I looking at Steve Buscemi? But Steve Buscemi in 30 Rock, and I think his character's name is Len Grossman.
Oh, yeah, the detective.
But he's the...
Or P.I.
Yeah, he's the P.I. for Jack Donaghy, and he pops up on occasion. Every time he's in 30 Rock, he's so fucking funny. There's one scene where him and Jack are like, you know... Jack Donaghy, played by Alec Baldwin, are out, you know, like, doing a covert thing, and, like, Jack is smoking a cigar, and he throws it on the ground, and Len picks up the cigar and keeps chewing on it. And it's just, everything that he does, every choice that he made as that character, is hysterical. I love Steve Buscemi and all of the stupid Adam Sandler films. He's who I look forward to seeing. Like Mr. Deeds is Crazy Eyes. And weirdly, Mr. Deeds is a very like sentimental film for you and I. Because it was like our early, when we were dating, Mr. Deeds played a big part in that. And we still are always quoting fucking John Turturro in that movie. Very sneaky, sneaky, sir.
Very, very sneaky.
Very, very sneaky. But, like, I love Steve Buscemi. He's, of course, great in, like, Reservoir Dogs. He's great in all the, like, the weird sort of, just kind of all the weird parts that he's had over the years. You know, Pulp Fiction, he's in there as the waiter, which I think is great. He's
I mean, he has a huge part, not a huge part, but
Con Air.
He's in Reservoir Dogs as Mr. Brown, or yeah. No, as Mr. Pink.
Mr. Pink, yeah.
And he hates the fact that he's tipping. Mr. Pink.
Yeah.
And he hates tipping.
And then,
I love his character in that movie.
And, you know, like Donnie in The Big Lebowski, he's just so pure. Like, hey, dude, I think your phone's ringing. Shut the fuck up, Donnie. Okay. Like, I love.
I mean, Fargo, he's great in Fargo. I mean,
he's great in Armageddon. Like, he's great in Wedding Singer.
He's even great in The Island,
yeah.
Which is a terrible, fun movie.
Have you ever seen 28 Days, the movie where Sandra Bullock goes to rehab and falls in love with Viggo Mortensen? It's been forever. Alan Tudyk is wonderful in that film.
Of course, and Alan Tudyk's great. Yeah,
but like he's in that. I just love Steve Buscemi. Steve Buscemi makes Con Air watchable. And that's funny to say because Con Air is like my favorite bad Nick Cage film. I don't want to watch Face Off. I tried to do that a while back and I couldn't handle it. I don't like The Rock as much as you do, because it's a little over the top. But if
the movie The Rock. Yes. I thought you were talking about the actor.
No, well, he's fine, I guess.
He's fine.
Yeah. But no, the movie The Rock. But like, if I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch a shitty Nick Cage movie that I love, it's going to be Con Air. Because my mom loved Con Air because she loved how hot Nick Cage is in it. And it is like peak hot Nick Cage. And Steve Buscemi with that little girl, and you're like, he's going to murder her, but he doesn't. Like, I love Steve Buscemi in that film. Like, him being the worst of the worst, the fucking Hannibal Lecter of that movie, and it's just Steve Buscemi just being Steve Buscemi. I love him in Mr. Deeds. There is this very small movie called Coffee and Cigarettes that he's in that he's delightful in. He was in Monster's House, which is such a good movie. He got into the Hotel Transylvania things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he still does a bunch of shit with Adam Sandler, which I don't like the later stuff, but, like, he's making money, so good for him.
I mean, the guy works. He's been in almost 200 projects.
Yeah, and I mean, like, all the TV stuff that he has done, he's hosted SNL twice, he's been on ER. Oh, 30 Rock, Lenny Wozniak. Len Grossman is somebody else, but Lenny Wozniak. He was in 6 episodes of 30 Rock, but every single one of his scenes is memorable. Like, I love Steve Buscemi. I think he's a pure delight. So, yeah, like, fucking this great cast. And then we have James Coburn.
James Coburn.
Who I only know because of
amazing actor.
My dad's Western obsession.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I have watched and love The Great Escape with Steve McQueen.
Damian Lewis.
No, not Damian Lewis.
Damian Lewis.
James Garner, Richard Attenborough,
yeah.
Charles Bronson. Love The Great Escape. He was also in The Magnificent Seven.
So, going through James Coburn's IMDb, I was trying to figure out like what I knew him from because I knew his name, but I didn't really know where I knew him from, and I hit this patch of movies from 1966 to 1971, where there's a lot of really funny names for movies back then, like back in the 60s, like they can name a film kind of whatever they wanted and it was okay. He was in a film called What Did You Do in the War, Daddy, in 1966.
Wow.
And then the following, and still in 1966, he was also in a film called Dead Heat on a Merry-Go-Round. Both of those films are very specifically titled. Those are the titles of the film. I'm like, okay, in like Flint, that's fine. The President's Analysis, that's fine. Duffy, these are all like normal like movie names. Waterhole Number 3. That's an interesting name for a movie. The Last of the Mobile Hotshots. This is another fun one. Duck, You Sucker. There's a movie called Duck, You Sucker that exists out there that James Coburn is in. I could not tell you anything about it. But What Did You Do in the War, Daddy, and Dead Heat on a Merry-Go-Round might be my two favorite film names ever.
Duck, You Sucker.
Duck, You Sucker. What Did You Do in the War, Daddy? The Honker. Like, he's been in some fun... A Reason to Live, A Reason to Die.
Harry in Your Pocket.
By the way, A Reason to Live, A Reason to Die sounds like a James Bond movie. Like...
The Last Hard Men. Are we sure that he wasn't a porn actor?
I mean, Hard Times.
Golden Girl.
Loving
Couples.
Yeah, like, there are some weird names Looker. Of movies back then. Good old James Coburn. Like, he, you know.
Silver Fox, The Player,
The Baltimore Ballet, Cross of Iron. Like, there's some really funny names of movies that that man has been in.
I mean, he was in, like, he was in like Flint, which was probably
the
one of
Dick
his
Powell
bigger
Theater.
Ones.
Oh, my God. I would kind of like to watch What Did You Do in the War... I don't think I want to watch What Did You Do in the War, Daddy, but I kind of want to know more about it.
I don't know. But James Coburn has an amazing voice.
Yeah,
and
he does.
In this movie...
And a very, like, distinct look. He was one of those, like...
Yes, he had a...
He's one of those men with a very angular, skinny, expressive face.
Yeah, especially in his younger years. Then we got Jennifer Tilly.
Oh, fucking... I mean, you don't even have to ask, but my favorite movie with her is... You know the answer.
Is it Bride of Chucky?
No.
Oh.
It's Let It Ride.
That's right. She's in Let It Ride.
Nice legs. Thanks. They go from my ass all the way to the floor. Like, do you know how often I wish people would compliment? I don't have legs nice enough for people to compliment. But if they did, my response would be, thanks. They go from my ass all the way to the floor. Jennifer Tilly, forever babe.
She's been playing Bonnie Swanson on Family Guy since day one.
Yeah. Poor Bonnie. But, you know, she's Jennifer Tilly. She's got that voice. She's got those legs. You haven't seen, you sweet listeners have not seen Let It Ride, because nobody has seen Let It Ride except for my family and the people that we've shown it to, Caveman. It is my favorite Richard Dreyfuss movie. It is my favorite Jennifer Tilly movie. And, you know, she's great in it. She's great. I adore Jennifer Tilly on the basis of Let It Ride alone.
And then, of course, people we've talked about before who are always in Pixar movies. We got Frank Oz, of course. Voices of Miss Piggy and Yoda and many more. John Ratzenberger, of course, from Cheers, and has been an additional voice in almost every Pixar movie since its beginning.
Point.
To a point.
Yeah.
He played the Yeti in this one.
I guess, like, there was a kind of a point in Pixar films where it became distracting to be like, where's John Ratzenberger?
It was always just a fun thing. You're not looking at, I mean, going into it, you're like, I wonder which character he's playing.
Yeah, sort of like Stan Lee. You're like, where's Stan Lee going to be?
But then
be
you
in
watch it
film?
And you forget about it.
Yeah.
And then when it happens, you're just like, hey, there he is.
Yeah, because it's not like he rarely ever did anything that didn't sound like John Ratzenberger.
Oh, yeah.
So now that we've gotten through the cast and everybody who made it, Monsters, Inc. is, of course, about the monsters who live, who scare kids under their beds. And
I think it was a really
their
fun
scream power
original
and
idea. The way that it was all built, the door scenes, like the doors themselves was a really cool
screams
idea.
Screams equate power, though?
It doesn't matter.
Fair.
How does a warp drive work?
Fair. All right. I was about to explain it, but I don't actually know how a warp drive works. I'm sure
it warps.
It warps, yeah. It warps time and space. I don't know.
I'm sure
but, you know,
Paul Scheer's character from Lower Decks could
oh my
explain
God.
It to
I
you somehow.
Bet. I fucking bet he could tell us.
He's not going to do it in layman's terms, though.
How did this get made? The other incredible movie podcast that's out there, that's not Movie Mingle, is coming to our area soon. And I really hope we get to get tickets, because I would love to meet Paul Scheer again and shake his hand and again and just tell him that I love him. You know, we all know the plot of Monsters, Inc. And we've all seen it 1 to 1,000 times. You know, I know some people that who have a child named Sully. I can't 100% guarantee or, you know, validate that their child was named for this character, but, like, that's fine. I mean, you know, we may or may not have named one of our children for a Marvel character. Like, people have fandoms, and that's okay. But this movie is very cute. It's very sweet. The door sequence is incredible. The sequence that made me giggle really hard, especially as a fan of The Right Stuff, was when the scarers come onto the scare floor.
Yes, slow motion.
Yeah, and it's slow motion. And then the pageantry of them all coming in and all of their, like, you know, assistants are lined up in a certain way. And then they all have to face their door. And then they all have to, like, turn in a certain direction. I always enjoy pageantry in movies and in, like, stories, because you have to think they had to rehearse this at some point. Like, this shit does not happen naturally, where you walk up to something, you turn 90 degrees, you stare forward until somebody calls, like, and then you turn back. It's very military-esque.
Yeah.
But, like, that has to be practiced. So the idea of all those different monsters.
The rookies are, I mean, those rookies that are in the other room.
Yeah.
Trying the janitors, to practicing yes. on scaring kids. The after you pass that,
yeah, then you have to go into
marching.
Yes, the march. It marching cracks practice. Me up. Like in the Lord of the Rings and the Two Towers, where all the elves turn on a dime and like position themselves at Helm's Deep. That shit had to be practiced, and you know how there was like, no, you in the corner, you're not doing it right. Like
it has to be in sync perfectly.
Perfectly. This movie is so sweet. I don't. In Dreamlight Valley, there is the in-game currency is called Moonstones, and they cost real money. And I've never bought Moonstones. I've only acquired them through in-game challenges, which is saying something considering that I have, well, I had at one point close to 30,000. I've dropped down because I've been buying some stuff from the store lately.
Gotta use it eventually.
Yeah, right. You can't just hoard. I have been hoarding that money Scrooge McDuck style, but now I'm like, meh. But one of the things that I bought was a Harryhausen's sushi, like the sushi octopus guy, and I made in Eternity Isle, which is one of the DLCs, I made a sushi restaurant on one of my little islands that's all like Monsters Inc. theme, and it's, you've seen it, I think you watched me make it, it's maybe cute, it's fucking cute, that little area. You know, this movie's just, it's adorable.
It is.
Do you have a favorite scene in Monsters, Inc.?
Yes. I have a favorite, like, sequence.
No, oh, what's your favorite sequence?
Running away from Randall on the doors.
Yes.
That was...
That is an incredible sequence.
Yeah.
It feels like a roller coaster.
Yeah. Them the riding on the doors, going in...
And going down and going down, up, or, going around. You know,
trying to get in before the
Yes, like having to go through the doors and then out yeah. elsewhere.
And you never know which where you're going to show up. And
yeah.
Yeah. No, it's fun, creative, a ride.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I like it.
My favorite scene in this movie is... when Sully is bonding with Boo in the bathroom.
That's cute. Yeah.
That is so cute. I, you know, Boo is a toddler. She's what, 3-ish, right?
Yeah.
2.5, 3. She's young.
Very young.
Enough, you know,
old enough to walk and run around.
Yeah.
So maybe 3.
Maybe about 3. But still
the
kind
speed
of babbling.
In which she runs.
Oh god, the speed yeah, in which still fucking babbling. Toddlers can run. You turn your back on a toddler and you're like, shit.
They're fast.
You know what the worst sound a toddler can make is?
Or
silence.
Oh yeah.
if you have a toddler at home and all of a sudden there's silence, something is wrong.
Something is going on.
And it's,
which is usually when I found our oldest child covered in either yogurt or sunscreen, which I found them two different yeah. instances covered in one or the other.
Yeah. Or yeah. See, because I didn't spend as much time with our eldest as a toddler as I did with both our children when they were toddlers. Having two toddlers at home, having like a fucking 2-year-old and a 5-year-old at home, or a 4-year-old actually would be a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old at home.
Yeah.
Definitely destroyed my soul, and I don't remember a whole lot of it because I was just constantly in a state of like, pure exhaustion. But Boo is the cutest little thing, and they got, you know, an age appropriate little actress. She wasn't even an actress. She's the daughter of one of the people that work for Pixar, because that's what Pixar does.
They're always like, higher within
the right age. She's the right age. She sounds cute.
Right age, and she can repeat what we tell her to say.
Well, what they did was they just kind of like let her run around the studio, and they just followed her with a microphone.
That's cute.
So a lot of her gibberish, her just normal toddler gibberish, made it into the movie.
That's cute.
Her saying "kitty," so fucking cute.
At the very end, when he walks in and you just hear her say "kitty." Oh, the tears.
So I use the gif of Sully hugging Boo a lot. If like my friend's having a bad day or something, I send
that idea
gif
of being hugged by
this
that
giant
big,
furry creature.
It's like being hugged by Chewbacca.
Yeah. Oh my God. I finally got to live long enough to get a Chewbacca hug, and it was beautiful. Sully walks around California Adventureland. And our very good friends have a picture of their son being completely enveloped by a Sully hug. It's like him, and then the rest of the frame is just Sully, big, furry, real-life Sully. And the look on this kid's face is pure happiness and joy. And it's one of the sweetest pictures I've ever seen come out of Disneyland that I or anybody else has ever taken. And, like, Sully is one of those characters. First of all, he's kind of an asshole. He's a very singular-minded.
In the beginning.
Even still, he ignores Mike and Mike's wants and needs the entire film. The entire film. When Mike is yelling at him when they're in Tibet or Mount Everest or wherever, and there's
Nepal.
Like... Nepal, thank you. Like, Mike is yelling at him, just like, you care more about this little girl than you do about me. And it's kind of true. They've been friends forever. He has known Boo for like 6 seconds. And I get it. She is small. She is helpless. She is fragile. I totally understand. But Mike does not care. No, excuse me. Sully does not care about Mike's needs constantly in that movie. And I don't think he's that good of a friend.
Well, that's the whole character arc is Sully.
But see, no, Mike's character arc is just dealing with it. Because Sully never once puts Mike first.
Well, until the end, because now Sully is no good at the job because he's not a scarer anymore.
Yeah, he's...
And now it's Mike's turn to be, you know, the head.
The best.
Yeah, the best.
Yeah.
And
but we don't see that
a
whole lot.
Well, it's at the very end, you see Sully being very supportive of his friend, the fact that he is a good...
He's good
great
CEO.
At comedy.
Yeah.
And Sully supports that. Yeah. That's what I got from the ending.
I don't know. Like, I was watching this and I was like, you know, Sully interrupts the date at Harryhausen's.
There was a lot happening in Sully's life.
Yes.
And he did make it a priority over anything that Mike was wanting to do. Why he insisted on interrupting the date.
There was no
just
reason
to
for
let
him
know that.
Yeah,
he accidentally got a child
in
the real
world.
He could have waited. He could have gone back to their place.
Yeah,
like he eventually does in the first place.
Also, they like okay. So Boo blows the power grid of the neighborhood from her laughter.
Yes,
and then so the power's out. They leave lit candles around a toddler. Fucking! I was like, they put her to bed in a room with lit candles.
Yeah, that kid's dead.
That kid is dead. But, yeah, you know, I get that they're not parents and they don't understand, but, like, they should understand a little bit.
What?
But Sully and Mike, their friendship is so pure. One of my favorite things about Dreamlight Valley is how they've continued on the whole anytime a picture is taken of Mike Wazowski, it's blocked by something. And he's never, like, everybody's like, oh, no. He's going to be so unhappy. He's never
fazed by it.
He's never fazed by it. He's just
so excited that he...
So excited.
Yeah, and even calling up his family at the end, being like... And they're excited for him, too.
Yeah. And that's just... You know what? This world needs more pure enthusiasm. And Mike Wazowski. His enthusiasm is pure, and... Who else could you have gotten for that character? But Bill, like, I know that there's no reason to retroactively cast these characters, but who else could have been Mike Wazowski but Billy Crystal? Who else could have been Sully but John Goodman? Like, they just fit the roles perfectly.
A couple things that are fun to see, little Easter eggs that are fun to see in this movie that I always love catching is, first you got Randall practicing blending in with his background, and one of the backgrounds that his assistant,
who's played by Frank Oz.
Oh, that's
him. Who Frank Oz is.
Of course. Okay, Fungus. Okay, that's who Fungus is. Okay, so as Frank Oz, this character is bringing down those backgrounds, and he's practicing blending into the background. Yeah. And one of them is the wallpaper from Andy's bedroom.
Yeah.
Was a nice touch. Then you have the Pizza Planet truck. Yes.
When Randall gets stuck in the human world.
In the human world with the alligators.
Yeah, but that's from A Bug's Life.
Yeah, that's the same world as A Bug's Life.
Which is so cute.
Which is the same world as Toy Story.
Yeah.
And which I've always imagined all these worlds are similar.
There is a somewhere out there. There is an older internet thread of how all the Pixar worlds take place in the same world. Like Cars takes place in the future when humanity has destroyed themselves and cars have become sentient.
After Wall-E.
Yeah. It is after Wall-E actually. And then like Brave takes place in a slightly alternate pocket universe, but the witch in Brave is able to, you know, like bounce, like the witch in Brave somehow. It's a whole thing. Really
stretching it.
It's a stretch, but it is kind of fun.
You see, even though the movie hadn't come out yet, you see either Marlin or Nemo.
You see Finding Nemo stuff a lot in this film.
The famous ball from the opening shot of Pixar.
And it has a name.
Yeah, the animated short, which was also used in Toy Story. That same ball was used in Toy Story.
Oh, my God. When Boo takes Sully into her room and she's showing him all the stuff.
All the stuff.
Oh, my heart.
Because kids love to do that. Our kids, when they were toddlers.
Oh, they would be like, look at this.
Anybody who came over. Whether it was my parents.
Mine. Or
a stranger.
Yeah.
They'd just be like,
here's my favorite
doll.
Hello,
stranger. Yeah. You got to look at this.
Look at all my stuff that I fucking love. Yeah. But we did that too. I remember doing that to my dad's friends. Being like, look at this, you know.
Look at my interests.
I need you to sit down and I'm going to tell you everything about this.
This is exactly what this podcast is. Yeah, it's us as adults doing the same thing we did as toddlers.
Look at what we love.
Enjoy what I love. Watch what I love.
Yes.
Be part of what I love.
And then it's not even like it's our bonus episodes that are especially like, just watch Kingdom of Heaven, the director's cut. I promise it's amazing.
Even if you saw the theatrical version.
Just watch it anyways. Hated it. Oh my God.
Try the director's cut just once. Spend that $3.99 on Amazon.
Humanity is just all about wanting to be understood. And you understand people through, the easiest way to understand people is through art. Because, you know, first of all, again, I've said it a billion times at this point. It's annoying. Art is subjective. I got into an argument today with my coworkers about, they were like, oh my God, Nosferatu is so romantic. And I'm just like, in what fucking world is that romantic? And they're like, he would have done anything for her. And I'm like, she was a child. Grinch. Nothing romantic about Nosferatu to me. And they were like, oh my God, it's true love. And I was like, what fucking, like, I bet you also like Twilight and 50 Shades of Grey, you fucking turds. Anyways, art is subjective. But understanding each other through art is a beautiful thing. You know, we want people to understand us and our deep, carnal, you know, base animal emotions. But we can't express it through words. So we can express it through, please watch this movie that brings me joy. Please listen to this song that brings me joy. Please understand me through this medium of art, and it's beautiful. And I just wish that, like, I wish that we lived in a world where we were able to make art and not have to just die as cogs in a capitalist wheel. Monsters, Inc. is a beautiful little film. It is so sweet. It's solid. Do we want to get into ratings, or do you have anything else to talk about?
No. Monsters, Inc., it may not be
like the top, at the tier top Pixar. Of
my Pixar for choices.
Us. For us, by for the way. For us. Yeah.
But it's still... it still makes my heart, like, every time, like, Sully and Boo's relationship.
I think for you, especially because of having, you know, being a dad to a young kid.
I mean, that's why, I mean, between this and Up and
Coco. Yeah.
You know.
You know, it's funny. There's
luckily my dad didn't die, because then Onward would like also be like a huge fucking deal. Like,
you know, a lot of Pixar movies have more to do about father child relationships than they have to do about mother child relationships. But for me, especially now that we have like a teenager, Brave is a very particularly poignant film to me.
Sure.
Because I remember being a teenage girl and just being like, my mom doesn't understand me. And one day we will have, I hope we don't have a teenager that's like, my mom doesn't understand me. Cause you know, we have approached mental health and openness in a different way than my parents have.
Yes.
And than your parents have.
We try to understand them.
Yes. We try to let them understand themselves too. Yeah,
sure.
You know, so many Disney movies, the moms are fridged or sidelined in some way or another. And so I think it's cute that you get this movie, but like, I don't have the same emotional context of being a dad taking care of a young child. Being a mom taking care of a young child is so much different. It's so much different. It's
between Brave and Lady Bird.
You fucking Lady Bird.
I have a lot of...
Oh my God. You know what? And it... If when my children come to me and they are having those problems, I might sit them down and make them watch these movies and be like, I don't understand you, but I understand you. And they'll never get it. They won't get it until they're in their 20s and they'll be like, oh shit, mom knew what she was talking about back then. Because that's how it is.
That's how it is.
It's how it is. And meanwhile, they'll be like, dad was great the whole time, but mom didn't get it until I realized that she did.
I'm awesome. So Maggie, what would you give Monsters, Inc.?
I'd give it a 4.5. It's not a 5-star movie for me because, again, it's not like my go-to pick for a Pixar film. It's a sweet film. It's a quick film. I mean, they pack a lot into 90 minutes, and this movie doesn't. There's no fat to Monsters, Inc. that needs to be trimmed. It is just a lean, mean, awesome machine of a movie. I would give it 4.5. It's not my go-to. I'd much rather watch Ratatouille. I would much rather watch Finding Nemo. I would much rather watch Brave. But that's just preference. It's a sweet film. I'm very happy to have watched it recently because it's been a hot minute. One of my favorite things about this movie, which is really funny, is there are two different scenes, and they both involve sneezing. There's a moment where Randall stops. There's a lot of moments where Randall is completely unaware of what's happening behind him, and what is happening behind him is Boo and Sully and Mike together, right? Just waiting to be caught, terrified that they're going to be caught, but Randall's so clueless that he's just not looking behind him. But there's a moment where he stops and Sully and Boo think that they are caught, and there's this pause, and then Randall sneezes. And I wrote down having to stop because you need to sneeze, because that is such a human thing where you're just going about your day and all of a sudden you're like, I have to sneeze. And I know I have to sneeze. And nothing can happen until I sneeze. So you just have to pause whatever the fuck you're doing and you stare into the middle distance or you look at a light and you just wait for that sneeze to happen. And that cracked me up. And then Boo sneezing into Mike's face, because I cannot tell you how many times my children have sneezed in my face, even still as teenagers, which is why I have this cold, by the way. My children have just sneezed in my face, and you're just like, I made you, I love you unconditionally, I will protect you to the ends of this earth, but you just sneezed in my face and I want to kill you right now. So yeah, 4.5 for me. What about you, my love?
So one of the things I really love about this film is that the idea of it came about because after Toy Story was made, people would come up to Pete Docter and say, I totally believe that when I left the room, my toys came alive.
I never thought that there were monsters under my bed, per se, or in my closet, but I always was afraid of, like, things in my room. But the monsters under your bed or the monsters in your closet are such a pure
But he got, child. Yeah, he got the idea of, because if toys come alive when you leave the room, are there monsters living in your closet or under your bed? What other things are hidden that don't make themselves visible? And so that's where, kind of where Monsters, Inc. came from. But the title Monsters, Inc., I love the fact that Monsters, Inc. came from the gangster film Murder, Inc.
I don't think I knew that. That's funny.
It is funny.
That was really funny, actually. Like,
those are two very different
films.
I would give this film a 4.
That's
and
fair.
That's mainly because I hold.
I'll stick to 4.5.
I don't let my decision sway
for
your.
For what this movie is to popular culture is probably the reason why it gets a slightly higher.
I mean, when you talk about pop culture, as far or just the advancement of computer generation.
If we didn't have Sully, we wouldn't have Merida. And if we didn't have Merida, we wouldn't have had.
I mean, anything the amount of
Brave is underrated, dude.
What does Quarter Crew call it? When it's pretty much already pre-programmed simulations. Hair simulations have come such a long way since Monsters, Inc. But I remember.
But Monsters, Inc. was the
first time I remember actually like.
They were the beacon.
You watch Toy Story or Toy Story 2.
Toy Story 1 is hard to watch because it is.
The
animation is beautiful,
the animation is great.
So hard to watch.
Well, the animation is great for the toys.
Yes.
As soon as you start looking at humans, it's really.
If you didn't have Monsters, Inc., you wouldn't have gotten to The Incredibles because they had to perfect people in order to do.
But even in Incredibles, they didn't really spend a lot of time on hair.
No.
Like, the women's hair in that are still very.
But the
like,
fucking.
Very,
the,
look
the
very
textures.
Solid.
The textures
for sure. Yeah, no, they did
the textiles of Monsters or The Incredibles.
But hair simulations, specifically the fact that you can simulate hair and so many different strands, and every hair is animated.
If there wasn't Monsters, Inc., we wouldn't have gotten Tangled, and Tangled is a top 3 best Disney movie of all time. And you can fucking come at me, folks, if you want to. But I will die on the hill that Tangled is one of the greatest Disney movies of all time. I don't even think it's subjective. I just think it's true. That movie is so slept on. It's
top what?
3.
You think Tangled is one of the top 3 Disney films?
Yes. In my humble opinion.
Humble.
But also, like, okay, top 10.
Okay.
Overall.
I go with top 10.
Like my,
I don't know about top
like,
3.
My favorite 3 Disney movies are Tangled, Lady and the Tramp, and Beauty and the Beast. And they are constantly in a rotation for what's number 1.
Are we talking about historically important?
Nope.
Or are we talking about just your personal favorites?
My favorite.
All right. You can have it. Start top 3.
Culturally important, obviously, Tangled isn't anywhere on that list because people have slept on Tangled too goddamn much. But Tangled is a great film. But my point is, her hair, right? Rapunzel's hair would never have looked half as good if it weren't for Monsters, Inc. and Brave.
Well, just like Brave, for sure.
Brave.
Brave, for, like,
fucking
Brave
Merida's
took,
hair?
Brave took what Monsters, Inc.
did and
did
took
and
it to 11.
Took it to another level.
Yeah.
And since then, more and more and more movies have, or just, not even movies, it doesn't even have to be a
Monsters,
movie.
Monsters, Inc.
Just,
is groundbreaking because of its special effects.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know,
but,
we love it.
But I'm still giving it a 4 because to me, the story and the, it's all fun and cute.
Yeah.
And I cry at the end, of course.
Yeah.
Kitty.
Oh, kitty.
Tear.
Kitty.
But there are so many other Pixar films that are even higher elevated than that, that deserve a 4.5 and some. Even a 5. But yeah, Monsters, Inc., still a great movie. 4 is a great score. So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have two questions for you.
Hit it.
Do you know how to spell each other's names? I'm just going to go on the honor system.
D-O-M-N-H-A.
Oh, he's done it.
H-E.
Don't
forget the W-2-O-M-N-H-A.
Fucking, I love Domhnall Gleeson so fucking much. Yeah. You know, Domhnall Gleeson is in the Hozier video for, he's in one of his, the music video for one of his newer songs, and he's just like running around like the Irish countryside, like digging holes and covered in dirt, and it's so hot. I love Domhnall Gleeson.
Do you know how to spell Domhnall Gleeson's name?
No, fucking God, no. Absolutely not. No.
D-O-M. H-N-A-L-L-G-L-E-E-S-O-N.
You know what? That would be so much more impressive if you weren't looking at a computer screen.
I am reading it. No, so what?
And the other guy was the other guy is the happy, sad, confused podcast, Josh Horowitz? Josh something is the other guy asking that question.
This was an edited together YouTube video.
Yeah, so. No, but I know his voice.
Of course you do.
And he's from the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast, which I've listened to when my favorite people are on it, and it's a delight. And he always does really, really funny fucking shit with different actors and people that I love. He's done funny shit with Jensen Ackles. He's done funny shit with Jack Quaid. Like, that guy is Josh Horowitz. I'm pretty sure his name is Josh Horowitz.
I trust you. I believe
is. So delightful. And Domhnall Gleeson, that was definitely from the press run of either Ex Machina or one of the Star Wars films, because they were in them as well together.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that I was looking at today was just Domhnall Gleeson and Oscar Isaac together in videos.
Yeah, because they were in Ex Machina together, but they were also in Star Wars.
And some of the videos were very Star Wars question oriented, like. Or what it was, which had to be really annoying for them, is because when Ex Machina came out, it was already announced that the two of them were in the next Star Wars.
In The Force Awakens,
and so promoting this movie, but we're going to ask you Star Wars questions.
Will you play the clip again for my own enjoyment?
Do you know how to spell each other's names? I'm just going to go on the honor system.
D-O-M-N-H-A.
Oh, he's done it.
Fucking, I love them so much. You know what? Ex Machina is such a good fucking film, and I'm so glad we saw it on the IMAX so that I could see Oscar Isaac's arm vein at like 12 feet long.
God.
Oh my God. Thank you. You know what? You put in effort to find new Oscar Isaac clips. I was thinking about this today while I was at work, because I was explaining my podcast to a coworker. So many times people are like, oh my God, you have a podcast? And I'm like, oh God, we need cards so we can hand them out to people.
I can have them made.
Well, let's work on that. I was thinking about how I think at the beginning you kind of had like the same handful of clips of Oscar Isaac. Like, you know, it was a lot of Palpatine has returned moments. Sure. But like now,
that one's hilarious.
Somehow Palpatine returned.
But now you're putting in the effort to find a different clip for each episode, which means that you are deep diving into Oscar Isaac's, you know, just existence. And I love you for that. And I'm so grateful for that, because what a silly little thing where you're just like, my wife is obsessed with this man.
He's obsessed with another man.
And I'm going to go find dumb little clips.
Dumb clips of him.
to make him
look like an idiot.
To make her guess where they came from. And I love that for us and for you. And thank you for all the hard work you put in this podcast, Caveman. You're my true dream boat. These movies really should be whether or not they'd better with you in it. But I don't think you're that good of an actor. So
I'm not.
We're just choose my...
I did a... late 90s performance of, it was a Western take. Oh? It was a Western take on the birth of Jesus. So
who did you play?
I played a shepherd, but instead of a shepherd.
Was it a sheriff?
No, I was a cowboy though, you know, watching over his cattle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, shepherd. You were still a fucking shepherd.
I was a rancher.
Was this on video or was this live at your church?
Somebody probably took video of it, but two questions.
Yes.
First question. Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made Monsters, Inc. a better film.
No.
Specifically his voice.
I don't think he needed to be there for any particular reason, though.
Well, then it's question two.
Yeah.
Tough shit.
Where would he have been?
Which character would he have played?
I think he would have been fun as Randall. Although, like, that's taking Steve Buscemi away, which, you know how I love my Steve Buscemi. I think he would have been good as Steve Buscemi's little assistant, who was played by Frank Oz.
Yeah.
Now, while I love Frank Oz to death, and I always will, especially his performance in The Blues Brothers as the sergeant who gives Jake Blues all of his, stuff back. He's the one at the beginning of the film that's, like, giving him his wallet. And one prophylactic, unused. One prophylactic, used. I fucking love Frank Oz so much. But, like, if I were to pick a character that he could have played, I think that it would have been just for the hell of it. I love me some Oscar Isaac, but he doesn't always have to be in anything just for the sake of him being in it. And this is one of those movies where, as much as I love him, as much as I think that he is just everything in a dreamboat and oh so cute, and he currently is the face of my Apple Watch as Poe Dameron in his cockpit, so that every time I look at my watch, I see his face. As much as I love him, he doesn't need to be in everything, and this is kind of proof of that. Like, he doesn't have to be in Monsters, Inc. to make it better.
You know which actress I completely skipped over? She has a small part.
Bonnie fucking Hunt!
Yeah, Bonnie Hunt was
Bonnie
in this movie.
Bonnie fucking Hunt! She plays
her name's Flint.
Yeah, she's the person that's trying to train.
Like, operator that's training the new hires.
Yeah, the new hires. Apparently she had a bigger part, but it got cut down. And then she went on to be Sally in Cars. Isn't that her character's name?
Oh, yeah.
Bonnie Hunt is forever a dreamboat, forever babe, forever one of my beloveds. And, yeah, she has a small part in this, but fucking Bonnie Hunt. You know what movie Bonnie Hunt murders in is Return to Me, the David Duchovny Minnie Driver rom-drom. She plays Minnie Driver's, like, best friend. Jim Belushi is her husband, and they're perfect together. And then she's also really good as Tom Hanks's wife in The Green Mile. But Bonnie Hunt, forever babe, man, fuck do I love her. Bonnie Hunt, if you're listening to this, and I know you are, come on, Movie Mingle, so that I can just blow you with how
Bonnie
much I fucking...
Hunt.
She does a ton of stuff. She is a consummate character actress. She's out there. She's doing her thing. She's living her life.
Not what I watch. Like,
well,
you get her in Zootopia, but not very much.
I haven't seen Zootopia in so
long. She plays the main character's mom, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
She plays the doll in Toy Story
3
and 4. And
if she's made her money and she's just doing selective projects,
I know.
Good for
and
you,
all,
Bonnie
And it's all voice work, too. It's one of those actresses and actors when they get to a certain age, they either do voice work or they retire. And you're just like, man.
Good for you. I'm going to miss you.
Good for you, but I'm going to miss you. Yeah. And it's almost as if they died.
No. Bonnie Hunt's still out there doing
shit. No, I know, but it's almost like, for example, when was the last time you saw a Sandra Bullock movie or a...
To be fair, she retired to raise her son.
No, retiring is great. Everybody eventually, especially actors who...
And she's still out there doing shit.
I know.
Here and
not
there.
Not enough that I see
it. But do we need more Sandra Bullock stuff in the forum? I mean, she was great in that movie with Channing Tatum where she plays the...
That was... funny.
But then she was also in Bird Box, which... Ugh.
Bird Box was fine. Ocean's 8 was fun.
Ocean's 8 was great and wildly underrated. And frankly, the fact that there's not a George Clooney cameo at the end of Ocean's 8,
right.
He should have... When she was sitting at Frank Ocean's grave... Or not Frank Ocean's. At her brother's grave.
Frank Ocean. Danny.
Yeah, Danny Ocean. Thank you.
That would be
he
interesting
should
if
have
she was sitting at Frank Ocean's grave.
It would have been. No, when she was sitting at Danny Ocean's grave, he should have sat down next to her. And you would have been like, oh! And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Monsters, Inc. And we hope you enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. As ever, friends, family, loved ones who listen to this silly little podcast, thank you so much for all the time and effort you've given us over this last year plus, almost a year actually, of Movie Mingle. We really appreciate it. Please tell your friends and people that you know who like movies about our silly little podcast so that we can grow in an audience so that they too can listen to us, you know, wax poetic about movies and Oscar Isaac's perfect face. We love you all so much, and thank you. Thank you so, because, you know, without you, well, we'd probably still be doing it, but it would probably be a little bit more disheartening. Anywho, next week we have got the wonderful Tarantino film Django Unchained, which we're going to be very excited to talk about. As ever, you can find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or you just want to, I don't know, shout out the fact that we've been doing this for 52 episodes and we deserve a little love, you can always write us at MovieMinglePod@gmail.com. Like I said, next week coming up, we'll do Django. And then, of course, more fun, terrifying movies to come after that. I'm not looking forward to the next month or so of films on this podcast, but it's going to be a wild ride, and we hope that you enjoy it. Until then, please take care of yourselves in this crazy, crazy world of ours. Be kind to each other. Find your, you know, find your joy however you can, and definitely check for monsters under the bed, because one of them could be Steve Buscemi, and that's not always a bad thing. But until then, go mingle. Bye. Kitty.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caliban, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar?
I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't
want
to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. 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 Toga.